Welcome to the latest edition of the Falcon and Winter Soldier recap. We will be discussing today episode 3 on the IB Sports Podcast Network. I am your host, Keith Fleming. With me, normally my co-host and partner for the weekly daily fantasy football podcast, but as you learned last week, we can talk about other things. My man, Joe.
Occasionally.
Occasionally, right.
Still mourning my Arizona Wildcats coming just short in the women's final, but after what happened to Gonzaga last night, I feel a little bit better.
Did you not argue that beating UConn in a lot of ways is almost equal to winning a national championship because they win so often?
I mean, especially, yeah, if you're us and we had one Sweet 16, which is as far as we'd ever gotten. And, you make the championship, you beat UConn. Like, obviously winning would be the best, but right. This is about as good as it can be without winning a title, I think. So I'm happy. I'm a little bummed that Gonzaga lost just because I can't stand Baylor or Scott Drew, but that's.
And I'm not sure if it was the fact that both tournaments didn't happen last year and we just missed them, but it just felt like both were really good tournaments from start to finish. Obviously, we had some epic all-time. The women actually had more, in my opinion, like epic all-time games. But, everybody's going to probably remember the Gonzaga-Baylor game Gonzaga versus a UCLA game for was really one of the best games I've seen in a couple of decades. So, but we're today going to be discussing Falcon and Winter Soldier Episode 3. Again, this is the IB Sports Podcast Network. We would greatly appreciate it if you would subscribe to us. We are on Anchor, Spotify, and iTunes. After you subscribe, if you'd rate and review and then share the podcast, that would be great. But if you didn't listen to episode 1 and 2, that is up on the network, so you can recap that as well. We're assuming everybody's listened to these episodes. Watch the episode on Disney Plus. So we don't do a traditional recap. I just think that's kind of a waste of time when I don't know why you would be listening to a Falcon and Winter Soldier recap if you don't watch the show. So let's just start with this. What were your overall thoughts on this episode?
It was interesting because I was a little late in watching this one. I didn't watch it until Sunday morning. So I was seeing, a few reactions come in. My friend Zach, shout out to the On the Subject podcast. He said he loved it. He was like, this is what I wished Hobbs and Shaw had been.
Ooh.
So I was like, all right, that's interesting. And I saw Alan Sepinwall was just like, it was fine. So it was kind of like, all right, I don't know what I'll feel. And I guess I was somewhere in the middle. I think the second episode is clearly the best episode of the series so far. I thought there were some great action set pieces, especially when Sharon shows up. She's like a super badass now, and that's a really fun fight. But I kind of liked the ambiguity of some of the characters in the early episodes where they felt less ambiguous, more clear-cut, mostly clear-cut bad in this episode. So I missed out on that. And I just felt thematically, I thought, episode 2 was touching on a ton. And I thought there were hints of that here and there in this episode. And there were some good moments. Zemo with some great lines, but I'd say it was a B+ for me.
Yeah, I mean, I'm probably in the B range. And before I get into this, is sort of grading on a curve because Marvel's so good that I've noticed I get a little nitpicky at times with them because everything's always so good. And it's really not fair, especially this is almost like a mini series because it's just 6 episodes, to sort of grade an episode without knowing what's going to follow. Because I think I texted you this. It felt like in some ways this was an episode where they spent a ton of money on episodes 1 and 2. I have a feeling they spent a ton of money on episodes at least 5 and 6, if not 4, 5, and 6. So they had to make an episode that that didn't use a lot of special effects. It didn't cost a ton of money. We didn't see the Falcon gear at all this episode. We didn't see Bucky use his arm hardly at all. I think it was actually
I barely saw his arm.
2-3 times, right? Like a lot of times in a jacket where you couldn't see it. Mm-hmm. And it just, to me, felt like it was, you know, one of those episodes where they're trying to save money. I also have the concerns about the just overall storytelling and arcs, because it felt rushed. Like, because we talked about one of the things we loved in the first two episodes was the ambiguity of so many characters. Are they good? Are they bad? And literally the next thing we're going to talk about, they went in the total opposite direction on some of these. And it almost makes me even wonder why they spent that time in the first two episodes if you were going to, you know, sort of jump so hard back the other direction.
To that point, I think, you know, obviously at a certain point, there's going to be less ambiguity. People will take sides and things of that nature. But it was things happened very quickly in this episode that didn't feel always as earned as I think you'd like them to be.
That's a great word for it, earned, because it was sort of confusing to see these people take these sort of 180 directions out of, you know, kind of nowhere. I mean, literally, it was week to week. And then the last thing, which is very unusual for Marvel, just as a nitpick, is some of the editing and stuff was not great. Like, both of sort of the fight scenes, the one in the bar, and then also the fight on the shipyard, both had some really weird editing where the shots didn't match up as much as you're used to. And again, this is only because I'm saying this because Marvel's normally is, you know, out of this world on this stuff. But again, the positives, the performances by so many people in this episode, like both Sam and Bucky, again, their relationship. I mean, like, I could watch them do a 20 episode buddy series with these two guys. They could be cops for all it is, because I just love their interactions. The little thing, like, where, you know, when Bucky had to pretend to be the Winter Soldier to help them get by, I loved how Sam at the very end of that scene looked at him and goes, "Are you okay?" And, you know, he just kind of gives him the nod because he had to stay in character. And you're starting to see true compassion and, you know, caring for one another. I mean, Sam, I think twice in this episode calls him Buck, after we know he made sure that he said, you know, only Steve can call me Buck in the last episode, but he didn't have any problem with it here. Sharon was great. Just really good. She's been really good in everything. And then Zemo, like, where was this Zemo in Civil War, which is one of my favorite movies? I mean, he was so much more interesting. Loved the flair and stuff in him. But we'll get to him in a minute. And again, we kind of just do the big questions from each episode. And the first one, we were talking about the, you know, how they kind of stepped on the ambiguity. I was really big about the new Captain America last week, you know, when we did the episodes 1 and 2. Is he good? Is he bad? Like, what do we need to do? You know, I can't tell. They went out of their way to prove that he is not anything like Steve or the original Captain America. Just some of the examples. You know, John swore in this episode, which we know Steve famously swore in Age of Ultron. That was a whole, you know, bit where, you know, Tony goes language and, you know, later Steve has to go, "Man, I'm never going to live this down." John admitted, you know, he's okay with cutting corners, which I don't really ever remember Steve doing anything of that nature. He got physical with a civilian, which was really big. Like, I mean, Cap always going out of his way contrast to save him. Right. And then the biggest red flag to me was him just saying, "Do you know who I am?" Which I could never picture Steve as Captain America saying, you know, "Do you know who I am?" I mean, they pretty much drew a line in the sand that this ain't your mother's Captain America, I guess, as they would say. It's, this is not the Captain America we're used to with a new one.
I'm kind of glad that the "Do you know who I am" stood out to you so much, because I felt so dumb afterward. Like, you know, I listened to a podcast or a review and they're both just like, "Yeah, he swore." And I was like, it didn't even fucking occur to me, which is bad too, because I just watched Age of Ultron like a month ago. And like, obviously I should remember the whole back and forth with Tony and Steve throughout that movie.
Very out of character, though, right? That's why it was so funny. It was, yeah, I mean, you know.
But
And I believe which is literally the lowest, we know Steve.
Yeah, Steve didn't like using bad language, and then when he uses the most mild language possible for a swear. I think even like the show that Recess
elementary school, you know,
joke about that. Yeah. Right. So, but yeah, the do you know who I am? It's like I feel like that's the most often heard in a police cam footage of celebrities being pulled over for DUIs. So it's never a good thing to be saying that. So that was the one where I was like, all right, dude, like you've been Captain America for like a week. Like, cool the fuck down.
You know, Walter White going, you know, say my name, right? Pretty much at that point.
And my issue here is it's like if Walter White had done that in season two or something.
Right.
It's like none of this is like out of character, I think, from what we saw before. It's like you can imagine this guy getting to that place. It's just weird that we end episode two on him just being like the cocky guy getting them out of prison. And he's just like, stay out of my way. And now we're like opening episode three and he's at like a breaking point. Like if you interspersed him throughout this episode and we see them like fail on a couple different missions to try to find information. And then at the end, we get that scene, and then the actual final scene we get in this episode. If that part's condensed, but the rest is spread out to show his frustration building, that would work better to me. Obviously, we are working with a condensed timeline. Like you said, it's only six episodes. But that would have just made it less jar. It just felt too easy for him to just now all of a sudden, like, oh, he's basically already getting to being the bad guy. When an episode ago, he was trying to get Sam and Bucky on his team. It's just
especially with that first his introduction scene too, which to me was the most powerful scene. Well, I guess technically his introduction scene was when they first say Captain America, but when we actually see the man behind the mask the first time in his school locker, everything about that was a hero, a good person, you know, a guy that, and it's just almost a little strange that was, you know, a 3-4 minute scene with again an episode later. In an episode that he's only in for maybe 4 minutes, it's that hard of a turn in character. It's just, again, it's just kind of surprising and it doesn't feel earned. But again, there's three episodes left, so we'll get that. So he's not the only one that has been, you know, exuding weird behavior. Like, the question I wrote down was, what's up with Bucky? I mean, I had to, on the second watch, really figure this out. Because on the first one, yeah, I noticed it. But then I really started thinking about it. I mean, he was straight up a bad guy a lot in this episode. He doesn't want to go with, he didn't want Sam to go talk to Zemo with him. Which, his excuse made sense. You know, you're an Avenger. I have history with him. Okay, I got it.
Right.
It turns out, obviously, that's because he was going to break him out. To make matters worse, and I thought what's really just a dick move is he asked Sam about, like, you know, permission basically to break him out when he had already made that decision, which to me is just so condescending and just like something that would really bother me. You know, it may have just been Zemo, but I thought there was some credence too to him saying, you know, when he had to portray the Winter Soldier for them to sort of get the meeting that they did, how quickly he fell back into his old role. And then that doesn't even include, and we will, you know, talk about this at the end, but he broke out of jail, the most hated man in Wakanda, who killed their king. And Wakanda's taking care of Bucky. Like, they gave him another arm. They tried to rehab him. All these things are pretty bad.
Yeah, I think, you know, not to belabor the point, but again, it just feels like he's obviously aware that Wakanda's going to be furious. He doesn't look surprised at the end of the episode.
At all. He says he wondered what took him so long. Or, I thought I'd see you. I don't remember the exact word, but...
So he's aware that they're going to want to get, like, kill Zemo. Obviously, he knows how much they helped him. And again, he just jumps to this very quickly, like, we've got to bust Zemo out, to the point where I won't even consult you, Sam. I'm just going to do it. Like, that happened. And again, I'm not, like, saying that there's no way he would ever do this. It just seems like it's a very quick decision to make, considering all the other factors that Sam points out to him in that scene. And granted, sure, it's fun to have that interchange of Sam being like, here are all the reasons we shouldn't do this, and then we're seeing it happen. Like, that's fun, although it was a pretty basic breakout as far as those go. To your point, you know, it's saving some money on the budget this episode. But yeah, I just think it's very quick. It's a little odd. One thing I really liked, I believe, is the AV Club review, where they're talking about how Bucky is kind of a guy who needs to be led. Like, he always, like, even, like, Steve, even when Steve was weak, Steve was kind of his moral compass, I think, always in that friendship to a degree. And then once Steve becomes Captain America, he's Steve's right-hand guy. Then he's obviously just brainwashed forever and literally, like, doesn't have control over what he does. And then he comes back out and he's Steve's guy again. So now I think he kind of wants Sam to be that guy. But in this episode, Zemo's the guy who's in charge. And so I think there is a little bit of him that kind of falls into, like, to your point where Zemo kind of mentions it. And granted, Zemo's obviously not beyond head games. But I think there is a little bit of him that's kind of just attracted to someone making decisions for him, which is, again, why it's a little odd that he is so quick to make that decision on his own without consulting Sam. It feels like it contrasts with what we've generally seen of Bucky.
And again, I'm pretty sure that he basically says he's going to steal the shield too, which you need to remember that, I mean, the new Cap's not a great guy, but Sam has already told him, you know, remember what happened last time we did this, which ironically also has a payoff in this episode, but it's just his behavior it was kind of jarring watching it that second time where you're really kind of thinking about the episode and I'm going, man, Bucky was like a real prick this episode, especially to Sam, who, like, you know, we're hoping they're going to eventually be that duo. And remember, right now, we kind of know that either him or Sam is going to end up with the shield. Obviously, I think it's going to be Sam, but it's kind of hard to say that, you know, he's any more worthy of the shield than the new Captain America right now, to where there's quite a contrast with Sam. And again, that may be the purpose.
And Sam also still doesn't want it in this episode. Right, he's now like, I should have just, like, gotten rid of the shield. He still is not close to a place where he feels like he should have accepted it.
So I think we can both agree one of the highlights was Zemo. He was just, I mean, amazing. Like, he really was. Definitely. Just what a character. Are you okay with them kind of retconning his backstory where he's a Baron, which I guess is royalty, until, I love his line here, as, you know, he said, I was royalty until your friends destroyed my country.
yeah.
You know, obviously this, and when I say retconning, it's because, you know, he's got the jets and the resources and stuff, which is obviously a big point in this because it helps him move around. But are you kind of okay with that? I was, just because his character is so much more interesting.
I was, because I agree it was a little bit jarring. We're just like, wait, this guy has all, he's like the European Bruce Wayne. Like, what's going on?
Why was he so bland too in Civil War? You know what I mean? Like, he was so bland.
But I think it generally works, because I think you can explain pretty much everything outside of, it's weird that no one mentions that he was a super rich guy who has a bunch of underworld connections in Civil War. Because if you think about it, it's like, well, why would he be bland? Well, he's still very much in mourning.
Yeah, that's a good
in
point.
Civil War. And I mean, he's kind of won at this point. Like, Cap's gone. I don't think he really knows what happened to him. Tony's dead. Black Widow's dead. Like, he kind of got what he wanted. So I can see why, like, it's years later. It's many years later, because they did a time jump. I think it's 2024 now in this 22. Universe.
22? Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, it's even further ahead than we are. So it makes sense that now he'd be, I guess, going back to his more vibrant personality. And then it also kind of makes sense when you look at, like, all the stuff he was able to accomplish, all the travel he has to do within Civil War, it kind of makes sense that the guy's wealthy. Before, it's just like, I guess he's a special ops, so he figured a way out. But now it makes even more sense, actually.
Because he takes back. that guy down so easily at the beginning when he knocks on the door, and you know, and he does. He's got the guy hung upside down, and it makes a lot more sense. So
it works for me because, I think it still mostly tracks. To your point, he's more fun now too.
Oh, he's a lot more fun.
Daniel Brühl gets to show some charisma, so I'm sure he enjoyed that too.
So I had said before, I thought the purple mask was going to have something to do with Thanos. That is not true. Apparently, the purple mask is something to do with the family, with being a Baron. So that is that's why that's there. I loved how he put that on and then whooped ass too. That was really cool. The most interesting dialogue from this episode, and maybe of the show, another thing that on the second episode I really caught, second watch really caught, Zemo in the jet basically kind of drew a line when talking to Sam and Bucky from Hitler to Red Skull to Captain America, following up with saying, when you put people on pedestals, their flaws are forgotten and bad things can happen. I thought it was really important, or at least it seems like it should be, that the showrunners chose this line to be put in there. What do you think the thought process or reasoning for including that? Because, I mean, in some ways, I get what he's saying. Mm-hmm. Just like I think it was Jarvis or, Vision who said that, the more, basically by just introducing yourself, Tony, and by showing off all this, it just brings confrontation. It brings, this is sort of a play on that, where it's saying, again, when somebody's a superhero, you put them on a pedestal, and then eventually they can start doing bad things, and people don't even notice.
Right, or you find excuses for it.
Correct.
I think from a character standpoint, it's very easy to understand, because obviously, A, he just didn't like the Avengers, and yet, as far as reasons not to like the Avengers, his were pretty good. I think also you look at Civil War, that movie definitely, I think, takes Cap's side on the Accords. But you can still make a good argument that Steve was wrong there.
Oh, and Tony, I would imagine, I think, wins the argument in the very beginning of Endgame when he goes, we're not the Prevengers, we're the Avengers. And, he says, I wanted to put a shield around the world, but you wanted your precious freedoms, which I thought that sort of showed that Tony was in a lot of ways right.
Well, to go down that, it's also like his fault that Ultron existed.
I get that.
Because he went too far in trying to build that shield.
Not just him. So, him and Banner both. Don't forget Banner is also involved.
Yeah, Banner is involved in that. But, I think it makes sense definitely from Zemo's point of view, because his whole thing is like, basically no one should have the power of a super soldier. And all the more so, you shouldn't be able to just do whatever the hell you want with that. So for him, it makes total sense. I think, there's an interesting question to be had here about, I think it's going to be interesting to see what this show ultimately is saying about the legacy of Cap. Because there's a number of things, including Sharon in this episode, where I don't think it really makes sense that Steve wouldn't have done this. So I've just been kind of hand-waving some of that stuff away. Let's pivot right to
that, you brought it up. It was kind of shocking. I mean, this was on the initial watch to hear. Mm-hmm. I mean, how surprised are you that Steve did nothing to help Sharon after Winter Soldier, at least that we know of? Remember that she stole Cap's shield and gave them information that was basically treason, allowing them to get to Zemo first. So, I mean, you want to talk about sticking your neck on the line, and it was just sad, right, to hear that Steve, Sam, they let her basically kind of take the fall for all that.
It's just hard to fathom that that's what would happen, that no one would have stepped in to help her out. But I am starting to wonder more now if these are more conscious choices, in which case I feel like I kind of need more justification for why Steve would have just not done these things.
And remember her relation to Peggy too, which is even, more, you would think, because by then Steve knew that. And mm-hmm. he would have gone out of his way to help her, you'd think.
Because she's like his niece.
Right. Which is just kind of wild.
But I do think this show is at least on some level, I don't know how much all of it is thoroughly thought through, but I think they've been very wise to kind of question. I think his motivation for giving Sam that shield is obviously good, and I expect this show to ultimately affirm Steve's judgment on that. But I mean, yeah, he doesn't really, as far as we know, he never considers what those consequences are for Sam to take that shield, which Sam is obviously keenly aware of. So, I think the show is kind of questioning Steve on a number of levels, on sometimes just straight up kind of his ignorance, which makes sense for a guy who was frozen in time for 70 years and missed the civil rights movement and all these other things.
But by the time he gives him the shield, he has seen the civil rights and all that stuff.
That's true. That's a good point. So he should have seen them. So he should be wiser than he is at the end. So, but yeah, I think the show is making a conscious effort. I do think, I still am just kind of like, I don't see how he would have just left Sharon out to dry like this.
So out of character.
But to your point about Zemo, granted, I think this one is harder for me to justify in my head. But Sharon's just like, kind of more fun as a jaded badass who's just wrecking people in the stockyard. Like, I thought that was the best fight of the episode, was her just taking out all those dudes.
She was so amazing.
One of the fun filmmaking things, because, you know, we did hit a hard on the editing earlier. One of the nice ones was when they kind of switched point of view to that guy and he turns the corner and she just like takes him out.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was pretty fun.
So since we're talking about Sharon, let's go over that, and then we'll get into the power broker. Sharon's last words in this episode kind of worried me. Obviously she spends the majority of the episode helping them. I was a little confused how she knew they were there to come rescue them early, but maybe it was, I'm not sure, other than the conclusion that I think we're going to get to, that she has some kind of relation with the power broker. But her last words in the episode, as she gets in the car to a female that we don't know, is, "We've got a problem." Actually, a couple of them. And if you think about, there was two lines in this episode, too, that really stuck out to me about her. One is when Bucky says, "You're all kinds of awful now," which I know he was sort of joking, but there was a point to it. And then again, I loved Sharon, especially the way she looked at Sam after this. And she goes, "You know, the whole hero thing is kind of a joke."
Right.
Are you worried that she is double-crossing Sam and Bucky, or at least, you couldn't blame her if she's working for her own interest here. And I did find it kind of, interesting that she was so, you can get me back, because I don't think anybody can do that. You know what I'm saying? Right the wrong. And if, that can't be proven, I do worry she may not, be out for Bucky and Sam, but out for herself here.
Yeah, I think, it's kind of hard when she's just reintroed in just one episode to be like, is Sharon really going to be bad after, we saw her, go toe-to-toe with, I forget what Frank Grillo's name is in the MCU, but like...
You understand it, though. She was jaded,
well,
right?
It makes sense that she's jaded. It was a little hard for me to be like all in and like, she's a bad guy, but...
Maybe doing what she's got to survive, right? Because we know on this planet, she said, in this country, you sort of, it's basically a lawless area. That's why she ended up there. You got to kind of do what you got to do to survive.
Yeah, I definitely think she's definitely willing to cut some corners now to make sure that she's taken care of, which makes sense when you're all that you've got to count on. You're going to have to do stuff like that. So obviously, she's going to show up again. I think that's like the most obvious thing in the world. One thing that got brought up, I know, in the AV Club comments, is someone theorized, and I don't expect this to be true, but I think it's an interesting thought, is what if she just is the power broker at this point?
Ooh.
That, like, she kind of used that time in the blip, like, she was on her own, still running from the government, to just kind of use whatever contact she had to, like, build herself up within that world, and now she's the one.
Well, that makes me feel... go ahead.
I'll read off their little post here. So they think she's clearly the power broker. She knew where Selby was and killed them nonchalantly. That's the theory, because we obviously didn't know exactly who killed Selby in their meeting. Right. She's got a sweet apartment filled with powerful artifacts that obviously, like, yeah, those paintings are worth, like, millions. She's supervillain monologues for a bit about how superheroes are terrible, which that was very much a supervillain monologue. She knows exactly where the scientist is and where he's hiding, which is one of those things where it kind of feels like if she doesn't know who the power broker is, or like isn't involved with him in somehow, or is the power broker, that kind of feels like lazy writing with how quickly she knew all these things. She can kill anyone in a fight now. She's just a super badass. She's upset when the scientist gets killed by Zemo, which is another thing where they kind of rush past that. Obviously, they have other things to deal with, but no one's like, seems that upset that Zemo, outside of her, like Sam and Bucky are just kind of like, I killed the guy.
I think or Bucky, one of them says, what did you do? So, I mean, I guess they were kind of. So I see what you're saying, though. They were also, though, you know, in the middle of a building being blown up. So, you know, you're not really a lot of time to think about it.
No, my guess is it's a little bit of a red herring. They want us to consider that, but she won't ultimately be the power broker.
What
but
about she an took interesting the super thought. I think you got to consider it. Serum, because that was kind of my take on it, because she whooped ass so easy. I mean, she took down like 15 guys by herself, and that kind of made me wonder if she had taken the super soldier serum.
I don't feel like she did anything within that fight that was like kind of otherworldly, so I'm going to say no. But that's another, yeah, that's definitely another idea to consider, because obviously she was in proximity to it. So, and she seemed to like have a good knowledge base about where all that stuff would have been. So it's definitely possible.
So we were going to get into the power broker, but with what you just said, you know, they described in the episode as every kingdom needs a king, and Madripoor, where I want to say they said, though, he's the judge, jury, and executioner. Maybe I'm wrong, though. I'd have to rewatch that. Maybe they just said they are the judge, jury, and executioner. They are
also there's also the possibility that she would want someone else to appear to be the power broker.
That's very fair. Because they said, too,
the Iron Man 3 situation.
Right. And do remember that it is, you know, they went out of their way, in my opinion, to make it seem like, because Zemo says he knows of them, but it seemed like nobody really knows who it is. They just know about their power, how if you mess with them, it's not going to be good for you, which is, again, to kind of further your point. Most important thing. They are responsible, the power broker, for the super soldier serum right now. Now, do not forget, though, that it started, and we found that out, with Hydra and then the CIA. So Dr. Nagel worked for Hydra, then the CIA, which do not, like, just downplay that. He worked for the CIA, again, showing the U.S. always out for power. Most importantly, he isolated the parts of the blood that made the super soldier serum. As he said, no clunky machines. Think of Steve, jacked up bodies. You know, you think of really any of them, the Bucky, the Red. He goes, you know, it could be anybody. And we see that with Carly, who she doesn't look like she would have the super soldier, which it does make her more dangerous, because you'd have no idea if this girl's about to be able to throw you 40 yards if she wants to. and he talked about that he was basically perfecting it. And then the blip happened and he got blipped. And when he came back, the program was abandoned. The power broker hired him because, obviously, I'm shocked that they would let somebody with that kind of knowledge just go. What do you think he's going to do? Somebody's going to want that. And then he made 20 vials that we know at least some of them were stole by Carly. So I think there's eight that we know of in the Flag Smashers that have the serum. That would mean that there's 12 more, roughly, from what we've seen. And now we know, obviously, there's no more being made because, as you said, and I mean, the dude has done a good job of
Zemo
sort of
keeping what he wants.
Zemo has been, I mean, give Zemo his credit. In Civil War, he wanted to break up the Avengers. He wanted to see them kill each other. He almost got his wish there. He did break them up. And then, this episode, again, his whole goal is to kill all super soldiers, all people with powers, which Bucky better watch out if he keeps hanging out with him, because definitely. That would probably be the end of the list. It just, do you think that we're going to find out where all the bowels are? Is it going to just be a deal where they just said there was 20? Because I thought that was interesting that they're showing there's at least 12 more bowels possible to be out there somewhere. And again, that's if Carly stole them all. He made it seem like she did.
My expectation on that would be by the end of this series, that'll be settled. They'll have been used up, or we'll know where they are at the end. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean like the good guys will have them all accounted for. But I think like if there's some left over, we'll like see someone like carrying a briefcase that we know it has them in there or something. So I would expect them to answer where those are by the end of this series.
So
one thing I want to, before we move on, just because I think this is kind of the thematic stuff that wasn't so much in this episode, but when that doctor's talking about how he, you know, used some blood from, you know, I forget what the wording he uses, but it's pretty clear that he's using Isaiah Bradley's
correct
blood.
No, for sure. Absolutely. Because you got to remember that all the other ones died. Mm-hmm. Isaiah, and I mean, that's from the first episode. The everybody died but Isaiah, correct.
And so obviously, I know the guy who actually wrote the original comics about Isaiah Bradley, he was inspired by the Tuskegee experiment, which people don't know. That's where at Tuskegee, and I believe it started in the 1930s, they tested
the
a bunch
70s.
Of
Africans. Through the 70s.
Right. It was like a 40-year experiment where they found, I believe it was like, I think it was a couple hundred at least, black men who had syphilis. Now, contrary to some conspiracies, they didn't give them syphilis, but they discovered these guys had it and didn't tell them, didn't treat it at all, just to see what would happen. And so he was kind of inspired by that to do the Isaiah Bradley story. And then this reminded me of Henrietta Lacks, who was a African-American woman in the 50s. She was a mother. She went in. She had cancer. They biopsied the tumor, and they found out that she had these cells that are immortal cells. They'll produce faster than they die out of that cancerous tumor. She ended up dying later that year. And those cells have been like a godsend to the medical community. They helped cure polio. They've helped treat measles, like all these diseases that we couldn't figure out before, because these cells would live long enough that you could test a bunch of stuff on them. And you know, her family didn't even know about that till the 70s, so over 20 years later. And she died, and no one's ever been compensated for it or anything like that. So this, I thought, was a pretty clear link to Henrietta Lacks in that situation. So I just wanted to make sure we touched on that before we moved on.
More evidence, again, that Sam has plenty of reasons. That Bucky, obviously, again, being a white person, and we see it in America all the time, doesn't understand why Sam would not want to have the shield and be that symbol. And that's something that I think they have done a very good job in the first three episodes. And again, as a white person, I hate almost even talking about this stuff. But, I mean, I do understand at this point what white privilege is. Like, and, I mean, it is. It's like a light bulb going off because you start realizing, wait a minute.
Definitely.
All this stuff is just easier for me. You know what I mean? It's just easier than it is if you're a person of color, particularly a African-American male. And it just, I like that they're showing that. You know, we almost joked about how, you know, in the first two episodes, Bucky got away with pretty much everything. It looks like the government's taking care of him to where Sam can get a $50,000 loan. And it's like, if that's not showing enough, again, here, it's just more and more evidence of why Sam would be hesitant. Because even when Bucky's talking about stealing it, not only about being arrested, I think Sam's kind of saying, you know, he didn't know if he wants it. And Sharon really drove that home, you know, with her line again, that, you know, the whole superhero thing's kind of a joke, right? We did not see a lot of the Flag Smashers or Carly in this episode. But again, it's sort of a theme. They were very, you know, are they good? Are they bad in the first couple of episodes? It was very difficult, but similar to the new Cap, similar to Buck, they really took a hard left because she went out of her way to kill everybody in the building, which even the person in her car riding with
her, he's taken aback.
It's like, whoa, like, you know, everybody wasn't out of there. Was that necessary? And she basically just like, you know, Drago, if he dies, he dies. and I think it was, I'm pretty sure it was letting you know some of those people were innocent. They were not all involved in, you know, basically what they were trying to steal. That's got to be important to show, right? It's almost to the point, and this is the one thing I kind of want to discuss out of this. It's the one thing I'll give them, because a lot of lines are sort of, and we'll get into this with the final question. I'm not sure how they're going to do this, but it's almost to the point where, other than Sam, everybody else in the show is not, you know, whether you want to call it
morally compromised,
good enough, yeah, whatever you want to call it, to, you know, take that mantle of Steve Rogers, Captain America, and the Shield. Do you think that's kind of what we're getting? Because I still don't think necessarily the Flag Smashers are bad. It's almost more what our boy was saying, Zemo, in the episode, that, you know, they're being put on a pedestal now. Flag Smashers, we saw the reception that they got from people. And again, how easy it is for, you know, when you, your head gets big and you think you're loved, and, you know, you have this, you know, mission, or this, you know, this plan, or, you know, this fight that is noble, and you'll do whatever, and you cut corners, and next thing you know, as he was saying, you have Hitler in Germany, you know, or whatever it may be.
Right,
you know what I'm saying? Where, like, it's like you cut a corner, and the next thing you know, for your cause, you're evil.
Right. If the ends always justify the means, then you end up in some pretty bad places.
That's what I was saying. There you go.
Occasionally, I'm able to find some brevity in my comments. What I will say about the Flag Smashers stuff is this felt a little bit less rushed than some of the other things, because she does have, you know, I think, you know, a family member, or I think, like, the woman who raised her or something is, like, dying of tuberculosis. And does she die in this episode?
It's her mother, right?
Was that?
I believe
I don't know if
mother.
It's her mother or the woman who raised her, mother either way. So I think that makes sense, that would be a thing that would then push you over the edge a little bit. Whereas, again, just show me Walker failing at this mission to get to where he is now. Like, so having someone die is something that can automatically, like, even if she might later on think about this and be like, man, I don't know if that was the right thing to do, in that moment when you're dealing with that grief, that makes sense.
And remember the commercial that opens the episode, right? Which is by the committee that is, you know, supposedly making the world better because all these people came back after the blip and the return. And again, we talked about on the first episode, there's a million reasons why you can understand why, if you're somebody who's been around the entire time and then all these people come back and it's kind of right when you've moved on, got things figured out, there would be reasons you'd want things to go back, you know, the way they were.
And then I would never want to, like, justify terrorism. But obviously, you know, a lot of terrorism is driven by, it's usually people who are out of power. And so to what she says, this is what they understand. You know, I would be with the other guy in the car who's kind of fuck?
Is that really necessary?
But, like, you know, that is kind of the real world thought process that people have when they're, you know, they're desperate, they're grieving, and they're out, and they don't have power. And so they do what they think will get at people's attention. And so I think, you know, this does point her at least, and probably the movement as it goes on, in a more villainous light for sure. Because, you know, like we said earlier, Walker seems like he's a bad guy because he's threatening civilians. He hasn't even murdered anyone yet. So, but I think that one worked for me in a way that the jumps with Walker and Bucky to a degree did not.
She's also been a really interesting character. Their talk before they go in for it, I thought was really well done. I mean, everything about the Flag Smashers, I think, has been handled really well. To see the way they're being, you know, almost again,
and
heroes.
I like the conversation that they had too, her and that guy. Yeah,
yep, that's
gave them a little backstory.
Mm-hmm. So the final scene, which is something we definitely need to get into, and then I got one other question on the kind of the overall episode. We have Zemo, Bucky, and Sam go to meet their latest lead. I'm sorry, this is another thing I meant to include with Bucky's shady behavior. He tells them he's going to hang back for take a walk, or I don't remember what exactly
it made no sense.
But again, he's lying to them once again. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, keeping things from
pretty,
you know,
obvious
Sam,
lie.
Particularly, too. I mean, it's very important to Sam. You know, like, I mean, that was him and, you know, Cap and Sam, and both Cap and Buck had a relationship where they would, you know, share everything with each other, but. He he finds one of the king's security from Wakanda because he sees two beads. It's almost like though she wanted him to meet her, which that's where I do wonder if there's more to meets the eye here. But because the first thing he said was when he sees her, I was wondering when you would show up. Again, it could mean a million things, but you just need to remember they have no love, Wakanda, for Zemo. He killed T'Challa's father. Just to me, the way Bucky said he was wondering when they would show up, is this something to do with him as the White Wolf? Is he working with Wakanda, or is it just that he knows that that would be a person of interest? But we know that Wakanda and, you know, their soldiers, if you will, they don't need any permission to go in and whoop ass. I mean, if they really wanted to just go get Zemo right there, they could. That's the main reason I wonder if there's not more to meet the eye with this, especially where it appears there's only one person there to meet with Bucky. What did you kind of get from that, you know, again, cliffhanger, I guess, if you will?
I mean, I am glad that Bucky's not caught off guard by this because, yeah, like to the end, Sam pointed it out, and obviously we would assume it occurred to Bucky.
Worst case, so I'm looking at it, right? Worst case, he expected.
Yeah, so I'm glad that he isn't taken aback. Like, oh my God, how did they? Like, right. Obviously he knows the Doral Milaje are like the best warriors around, so they're gonna find you. And obviously Wakanda has insane technology, so another reason they're gonna find you. So I'm very interested to see how he explains this to them or what his play is. Has he always been planning to hand Zemo over at a certain point? Like, I could see that being the... I don't know if that's what Bucky will do, although I feel like that's not what Steve would do. Because Steve would feel weird betraying anyone,
but they're
even
different people,
Zemo.
Right? And that's very
but, yeah, I kind of
see Bucky doing that.
It makes
that's a
sense.
For, you know, the White Wolf taking him and giving him his arms. It's like, I needed this guy for my plan, but also in my head the whole time I knew this is a way to take him from the prison that he was in, and we can put him in a Wakanda prison, or they can do whatever they want.
As soon as I'm done with him, he's yours, which I guess that's kind of what I would expect the negotiation to be like, where it's just like, I need you to hold back a little bit longer, and we'll go from there. Because, yeah, actually, that it does justify it a little bit more now that I'm thinking it through that way, where if he was always viewing this as a way to hand him off to them in the end. So, now yeah, I'm retroactively liking that a little bit more. I still questioning the way...
Oh, yeah.
That he, again, I don't feel like he's generally a very independent person. So for him to go on that plan on his own, still a little weird. But I'm liking it a little bit more as we reflect on this.
He really needs to start, though, trusting Sam. That's, again,
absolutely.
Remember that Sam was the one person reaching out to him. That was made apparent that since, you know, everything's happened and he's lost Steve, his psychiatrist even says, you know, you only have one other person that's reached out to you other than me. You know, she's the only person he's called, but it's Sam who's actually been trying to reach out to Bucky. He just needs to realize this, you know, this guy cares about you. Again, remember the line from, you know, inside after he has to be the Winter Soldier. I just thought that was, it was really, you know, kind of grabbed at the hearts when he does. I mean, Sam looks at him and you could tell he was serious. He's like, are you okay? Yeah. And I mean, I thought that was one of the more powerful, but I mean, Bucky, come on, you got to quit. You know, lying. I think even Sam says that at one point in the episode that, like, you've got to, you know, we've got to be on the same page here. You know, if we're going to be a team, we can't hide, you know, stuff from each other. The big question kind of to end the podcast. We only have 3 episodes left in this series, season, whatever you want to call it. There's just a lot to do, in my opinion, before Sam or Bucky should carry the shield. Sam, in the sense we don't know what would change his, you know, his mind to take the mantle.
That's a big piece.
In Bucky's case, is he worthy to carry it again with some of his behavior that he's shown in this episode? And then not to mention, like, I'm a little worried that Flag Smashers, we still don't really know too much about them or where they're going. New Captain America, we're definitely seeing that he's bad, but I mean, is he just a pawn to eventually steal the shield from? I'm worried about his arc overall. And I mean, even again, Zemo, where it's like, he had this badass introduction in episode 3. He proved, though, that he's not good. It's not like he's turned. He just has a mission that he'll do anything to, you know, fulfill, basically. And I just, again, I'm a little curious how they're going to do all this in three episodes. Do I have the right to be concerned that they are not going to stick the landing with this?
I mean, I definitely think you have the right to be concerned. I mean, they're juggling a number of balls. And like I said, I think, you know, the Walker stuff, I think, got short shift this episode, and I don't think it fully worked because of that. So, I think there's definitely concerns. The number one, though, obviously, about whether this show is successful is, I think, Sam's arc. Because, again, maybe he doesn't end up with the shield of this. Maybe it goes in some other direction. But if it is going to end that way...
I will say, though, just remember, there has been promos that they have shown, I don't remember if it's the first row or second, with him with the shield. So we know at some point he's got it, whether he's just using it in a scene,
right?
He's going to at least carry it for a little bit.
So if we're headed in that direction, I mean, sometime soon, Sam has to stop being the sidekick. Because
don't you think Isaiah is going to play a big part in that, or at least you
hope I think that's 100% going to be a major turning point somehow.
And because God, I hope we get the backstory or at least a flashback of him trying to rip Bucky's arm off. Because I just think that would be such
I'm doubting it, but I'm with you. Give it to us, please. But yeah, I think, you know, in this episode, he's clearly, he's like the third guy in this episode. And so if he's, again, he's the first name in the title of the show. So in these next three, I think we've got to see Sam really come into his own. And I think if you miss with Walker, that's going to, you know, it'll hurt the show. But that, you know, that drops you from an A- to a B+ to a B. If you fail on Sam, I mean, even if you fail on Bucky, I don't think that's as bad as failing on Sam, considering the ground that they're treading on thematically and stuff. So I think as long as they nail Sam's arc, I'll at least be okay with it. And I'm guessing that they will. And again, to your point, I think Isaiah Bradley is going to show up again. I think that's going to matter a lot.
Especially with the way, right, Sam reacted to it. I mean, he was so upset that there was this black Captain America. No one knew about it. He's, you know, basically...
He was in prison for decades. Correct.
Yeah. And I mean, it's, you know, infuriating. One other quick question, because this is something I wanted to bring up last week and I forgot. Is there signs that Bucky is aging or losing his abilities? It just feels like that, really, with the exception of the scene of him chasing the car, he just does not seem like the Winter Soldier. He doesn't even seem like the guy that you see in Civil War, where, you know, he's taking on Iron Man at times by himself. We know from Isaiah, eventually they age. I mean, it doesn't mean that they lose like their powers. Exactly. So is it kind of a point that they're showing that Bucky is maybe losing his fastball, if you will? Hmm. Or is that just something that I'm overthinking?
Because
it was shocking to me that he got beat up by those Flag Smashers. I mean, this is the freaking Winter Soldier. I mean, this is a dude that has killed some of the most, like, important people in the history of mankind. He's taken down, you know, what did they say, like, empires and stuff. And it was just, it's kind of crazy when you think about it, that these Flag Smashers, that I know they have the super serum, but they've just got it. And they whooped his ass.
I mean, we obviously do see him in the club. He holds his own pretty easily. But, mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, we saw him go head-to-head with Steve, and they were more or less equal. So it is a little weird. These Flag Smashers, who, as far as we know, are not like,
trained, you know, in combat.
Trained soldiers and stuff. Like, they've obviously lived hard lives and picked up some stuff along the way. But, yeah, I don't know. It hadn't occurred to me. I definitely think it's possible. I think that's something to keep an eye on. My guess would be no at this moment, but I could be swayed pretty easily depending on what happens in this next episode.
All right, any big predictions for episode 4 before we get out of here?
Episode 4. Big predictions. I don't think I have any. I'm super pumped that Dormilaje showed up, so that'll be interesting.
I think, you know, Captain America with them interaction, right? Because there's still got to be a resolve storyline between, you know, Bucky and Sam with the new Captain America, Bucky and Sam with the Flag Smashers. There's just a lot that's got to get going. So, and obviously, I think there's going to be an episode that there's a lot of time between Sam and Isaiah. I just think that that has to be with, you know, what they've already told. So I'm hoping this is going to be the episode since, you know, John, the new Cap, said that, you know, we're going to basically find somebody with a better hand, talking about Sam and Bucky. He's following them. I think there's going to be a lot of interaction between them. And obviously, we'll also find out what's going on with, you know, Wakanda and Bucky and, you know, again, why they didn't pretty much attack him, but instead kind of gave him a message to come, you know, meet them in the alley, which again, just even more makes me confident that there's more than meets the eye there. And it's not like Bucky's working, you know, doing anything that they didn't at least have some knowledge of.
Yeah. If I had to guess though, I'm guessing episode four is going to be the least action packed of the three we have left. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say that they're going to build up to kind of a crescendo in the last two. And then the one thing I'll say is, as much as I, you know, we are questioning, you know, how quickly some of this is moving, where it seems like we have a long way to go, and yet they're already skipping steps in some ways. I mean, three episodes, and I'm assuming, you know, we're probably going to get a little bit longer here in these last few. You know, we're going to have, like, at least, I would assume, like, 2.5 hours.
I think, like,
that's a full...
Yeah, that's only 5 minutes longer than what they've been. I believe each episode's been at least 45 minutes. I'm assuming we're going to get an hour-long episode.
We're getting a feature-length film with it, you know, comparatively in these,
like,
last
almost
three.
Almost an endgame, too. Like, not just any feature-length film. Like, you know, potentially three hours.
I think if you think about how much, obviously, you know, there's 20 films leading up to it, but they cover a lot of ground in Endgame. So it's definitely possible. You know, my expectation is they're probably going to still skip steps here and there to a couple of these things. But as long as you get Bucky and especially Sam right, I think we'll be happy at the end of this.
And I guess the one thing that I need to remind myself of, having done a podcast with RC for WandaVision, they're not all necessarily going to be resolved, because these are basically going to lead into movies. We know that. I mean, look at the end of WandaVision. It's sort of leading right into to the Doctor Strange. And even kind of something I really keep reminding myself is this was actually supposed to be the first series. It was written as the first TV series. And then because of COVID and stuff, WandaVision got moved up. So I'm very interested to see kind of what it's moving into, because that's what I think Marvel is going to do a very good job of, and why I'm so excited about these TV shows is it's just the character development is so much better. I mean, again, you look at Zemo in this episode. We got more from Zemo than we did in a 2.5 hour movie that I love in Civil War. But in one episode of 45 minutes, because we got to spend so much time with him, it just, you know, the character development. Again, with Wanda, I think Wanda is now the most sussed out character in the Marvel Universe. We know her backstory. We know her motives. We know everything. But it's going to lead into movies. Like, it just is. That's what they're going to do, is they're going to use these TV shows, I think, to do character development that eventually lead into the movies.
Which I kind of wish they didn't. I want a more...
Almost separate?
I mean, I thought they did honestly better than I thought they would with WandaVision in mostly telling a contained story, even though obviously a key part of it is moving Wanda forward for the movies. I kind of like the closed loops. You know, I think to me, the more I've gone through it in my head over the years, outside of The Dark Knight, I would say that Logan is the best superhero movie to me. And part of it is because that movie is obviously, there's allusions to other X-Men movies, but it tells its own story. It has a definitive ending.
Wolverine is a standalone movie.
So I want a little bit more. Obviously, I don't expect to ever get it with the MCU, but I kind of like, as long as you give me a mostly contained story here, even if it helps move the characters forward for the next movie, that's fine. I just don't want, you know, five different threads hanging where, like, even Monica in WandaVision, it felt like, oh, here's this interesting character, and then it was kind of like, but forget about her until the end, where now she's going to be in a movie. It's like, I didn't really feel like her arc worked out in the show. So I'm hoping more complete arcs within this show for everyone.
That's very fair.
Even if it's moving the broader picture forward.
And again, just to remember, these are the first two shows. They're Marvel's movies, in my opinion, even though Iron Man's an all-time classic. After that, you got to remember, they had several movies that probably if you ranked them would be on the bottom, and Iron Man 2 and 3. You got the first two Thors. Like, you have all these movies that were not, in my opinion, the best. And then if you look at the most recent movies, like, goodness gracious, like Thor Ragnarok, you know, both of, obviously, the Avengers movie, Black Panther. Like, I mean, they hit a lot of home runs recently. So they're going to learn. Like, that's the main thing. I'm very you have to give Kevin Feige, I mean, pretty much all the confidence in the world, because, again, they've done great, and they literally wrapped up all those movies into a great movie in Infinity War and Endgame. So do you have anything you want to plug before we get out of here? And obviously we'll be here next week for episode 4 review.
The only thing I will plug is a woke Zemo. He's very audacious. He's a lot of audacity.
The
in
greatest
his wokeness,
line in the whole episode, just, right, is when Sam goes, "He's out of line, but he's right."
But he's right. Which, yeah. So, and then even more bold, beyond saying claiming that anything captures the African American experience as a white dude, and a white dude from like Eastern Europe, all the more so, like, who's probably not interacting with a lot of black people.
Right.
And then also when Sam's like, "I look like a pimp," and he's like, "Only American would think of fashion forward black man looks like a pimp." And he's like, "You're talking shit to a black guy about this. This is amazing. Like, Zemo, pump the brakes." But yeah, I very much enjoyed it. Although he is out of line for sure.
I'm next time I talk to RC, I'm going to have to ask him at some point. I just want to hear one time from him. You know, I don't want to be out of line too far, but I would love to hear him say, "I'm out of line, but I'm right." You know what I mean? Because at least I know, all right, I'm on the right path, but I shouldn't have said it still. I shouldn't be telling you.
You're right, but you don't get to say that.
Exactly. It's like, I don't think it's a good idea for white people to be ever describing, you know, how or what black people are. I just want to plug again real quickly the IB Sports Podcast Network. Find it on iTunes, Anchor, Spotify. We have a Facebook group. It's IB Sports, Instagram and Twitter. Please be sure to follow those. And again, if you can, we'd really appreciate it if you share, rate, and review this podcast. And again, I am Keith Fleming, Joe Matz, and this was the review of episode 3 of The Falcon and Winter Soldier on the IB Sports Podcast Network. See you, everybody.